Chapter 2.
Yesterday afternoon, when I left Thrushcross Grange, it was misty and cold. I had wanted to stay by the fire in my study, but when I went in, I found no fire there. The maid was cleaning the fireplace, so I set out and walked 4 miles through the mud to Wuthering Heights. When I got to Heathcliff's door, a few feathery snowflakes were falling. No one answered my knock. Though I knocked loudly, the only result was that the dogs inside began to howl. Then Joseph put his head out of the barn window. He was an old man with a sour expression.
"What do you want?"
he shouted.
"The master's in the fields with the sheep. You will have to go there if you want to speak to him."
"Is there no one inside to open the door?" I shouted back.
"No one but the mistress, and she would not open the door if you knocked all night."
I was surprised to hear there was a mistress at Wuthering Heights. "Can't you tell her who I am, Joseph?"
"No,"
he replied, and his head vanished. The snow was falling thickly by this time. I tried to open the door, but it did not move. Then a young man with a pitchfork on his shoulder appeared in the yard. He beckoned to me, and I followed him around the house to another door. Finally, I reached the huge, warm, cheerful sitting room. There was an immense fire in the fireplace. The table was laid for the evening meal, and near the table sat the mistress. I bowed and waited, thinking she would ask me to sit down, but she just looked at me in silence. "Rough weather," I remarked. She did not reply. I stared at her and she at me. I felt very uncomfortable.
"Sit down,"
said the young man gruffly.
"He'll be in soon."
The female hunting dog, whose name was Juno, moved the tip of her tail as if to greet me. "A beautiful animal," I said, trying once more to engage the mistress in conversation. "Will you give away the puppies, Mrs. Heathcliff, or keep them?"
"They are not mine,"
she replied in a voice even colder than Heathcliff's. "Ah, well," I decided to try the weather again. "It's very cold out this evening."
"You should have stayed at home."
She was a slender and very young woman. Her figure and face were lovely. Her golden curls hung loose on her shoulders, and her eyes would have been irresistible had their expression been pleasant. Fortunately for my susceptible heart, their expression was a combination of scorn and desperation that seemed most unnatural in a beautiful young woman. She stood and reached up to take a jar of tea from one of the shelves. I rose to get it for her, but she snapped at me.
"I don't want your help. I can get it myself."
"I beg your pardon."
"Were you asked to tea?"
she demanded, putting a spoonful of tea in the pot. "I would like a cup," I answered.
"Were you asked?"
she repeated. "No," I said, smiling. "You are the proper person to ask me." She stopped preparing the tea and sat down in her chair again, clearly angry. The young man came and stood in front of the fire, glancing at me from time to time with a stern look, as if I were his worst enemy. At first, I had thought he was a servant, but now I was not so sure. His dress and speech were both rough, not at all like those of Mr. and Mrs. Heathcliff. His thick, brown hair was wild and messy, and he was unshaven. His hands were brown like those of a common labourer, yet there was something proud and free about him. I felt relieved when Heathcliff came in. "You see, I have come to visit you again, as I promised," I said cheerfully. "I won't be able to leave for half an hour because of this snow. I hope you don't mind me staying that long."
"Half an hour?"
he said, shaking the snow from his clothes.
"The snow will not stop in half an hour. Why do you go out walking in a snowstorm? You could get lost. Even people who know the moors well sometimes get lost in snowy weather.
Perhaps one of your servants could show me the way back to Thrushcross Grange.
Certainly not.
Well, then, I must try to find the way alone. The shabby young man turned to the mistress and said,
Are you going to make the tea?
Is he having tea with us?
She asked Heathcliff, pointing at me.
Get it ready, will you?
Was the answer, spoken so savagely that I started. The tone in which the words were said revealed a genuine bad nature. I no longer thought that Heathcliff was a fine fellow.
Now, sir,
he said to me,
bring your chair forward.
And we all sat down to tea, including the rustic youth. We ate in silence. I thought it was my presence that made them so grim and taciturn. Surely they were not like that all the time. So I tried to make cheerful conversation to alleviate the mood. Many people would think a life of such seclusion could not be a happy one, Mr. Heathcliff. But I am sure that here, surrounded by your family, with your amiable lady...
My amiable lady?
He interrupted, with an almost diabolical sneer on his face.
Where is my amiable lady?
I mean, Mrs. Heathcliff, your wife.
Do you think that her spirit is with me in Wuthering Heights, even though her body is gone?
I realised that I had made a mistake, and I tried to correct it. I should have seen that there was too great a difference of age between them. He was about 40. She looked no more than 17. At 40, a man does not think that a girl would marry him for love. That dream is the comfort of our old age. I suddenly thought that the clown beside me, who was drinking his tea out of a bowl and eating with unwashed hands, might be her husband. He might be Heathcliff Junior. What a pity! She must have married him out of ignorance that better men existed. I thought I must be careful not to make her regret her choice. The last reflection may seem conceited. It was not. The young man seemed to me almost repulsive. I knew, through experience, that I was quite attractive.
Mrs. Heathcliff is my daughter-in-law,
said Heathcliff. He looked at her with a peculiar expression on his face. He seemed to hate her. Ah, certainly, I see now. You are the happy husband of the amiable lady, I said, turning to the young man. This was worse than before. The youth blushed a deep red and clenched his fist as though he were about to hit me.
Neither of us is married to her. Her husband is dead,
said Heathcliff.
She was married to my son.
And this young man is...
Certainly not my son,
Heathcliff smiled.
My name is Hareton Earnshaw,
growled the other.
And you must treat it with respect.
I've shown no disrespect, was my reply. I began to feel very out of place in this family circle. The dismal atmosphere outweighed the physical comforts around me, and I thought I would not come again. When tea was over, I went to the window to examine the weather. It was not a pleasant sight. Darkness was falling, and the wind was full of swirling snow. I don't think I will be able to get home without a guide, I said.
Ayrton, bring those sheep into the barn,
said Heathcliff. What shall I do? I asked with rising irritation. I turned to look at Heathcliff, but I found that the only other people in the room were Joseph and Mrs. Heathcliff. Joseph was feeding the dogs. Mrs. Heathcliff was entertaining herself by burning matches in the fire.
How can you stand there idle?
Said Joseph to Mrs. Heathcliff.
When everyone else is working. But you are nothing, and it's no use talking. You'll never improve. You'll go to the devil just like your mother.
I thought for a moment that he was talking to me, and I stepped forward intending to kick the old rascal. But I stopped when I heard Mrs. Heathcliff's reply.
You old hypocrite! Aren't you afraid that the devil will come and take you away for speaking his name? You leave me alone, or I'll ask him to do it.
She took a long, dark book from a shelf.
I am learning witchcraft, Joseph, the black art, Soon I will get rid of all of you by black magic. The red cow didn't die by chance, and your rheumatism is no accident.
Oh, wicked, wicked!
Cried the old man, hurrying out of the room.
May the Lord save us from evil!
Mrs. Heathcliff, I said when he was gone, is there no one in the house who would guide me back to Thrushcross Grange?
Nobody,
she said. Then I will have to stay here. Heathcliff appeared in the doorway, looking grim.
I hope this will be a lesson to you to take no more walks in the snow. You say you will have to stay here. Well, then you must share a bed with Hareton or Joseph. I have no guest rooms.
I can sleep in a chair in this room, I replied.
I don't want a stranger in my house while I'm sleeping,
said Heathcliff. With this insult, my patience was at an end. I pushed past him and went out into the yard, just as Hareton was coming in. It was so dark, I could not see the gate.
I'll go with him as far as the park,
said Hareton to Heathcliff.
You'll go with him to hell,
cried Heathcliff.
Who will look after the horses if you go?
A man's life is more important,
said Mrs. Heathcliff, more kindly than I had expected.
I won't save his life for you,
said Hareton.
If you care about him, you had better be quiet.
Well, if he dies, I hope his ghost will haunt you. And I hope that Mr. Heathcliff never finds another tenant and that Thrushcross Grange goes to ruin.
Listen, she's cursing them,
muttered Joseph. He was milking the cows by the light of a lantern. I took the lantern and quickly went out through the gate, saying that I would send it back tomorrow.
Master! Master! He's stealing the lantern!
Cried Joseph.
Let the dogs go after him!
Two hairy monsters leapt at my throat. They knocked me down, and the light was extinguished. My nose began to bleed. I heard Hareton and Heathcliff laughing. Trembling with rage and humiliation, I cursed them. My threats of retaliation sounded like King Lear's, but still Heathcliff laughed. Finally, the big, strong woman who had saved me from the dogs on my first visit came out to see what was happening. Her name is Zilla.
Well, Mr. Earnshaw,
she cried,
are you going to murder the gentleman in our own backyard? Come, come, sir, you're bleeding. I'll take care of you.
She poured a pint of icy water down my neck to stop the bleeding. Then Heathcliff told her to give me a glass of brandy and prepare a bed for me.